Hey, welcome to Happy Place, the show where we take a deep dive into the minds of some very clever people and see if they can help us live life to the full. I'm Fern Cotton, and today I'm sitting down with the phenomenal Philippa Perry.
The thing is, your kid is not a project that you get right or ruin. They are a person you have a relationship with.
If you have young kids, know someone with young kids, or are just curious about how we develop into adults, you're going to love this episode. And her amazing book is called The Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read and Your Children Would Be Glad That You Did. It's such a good book. I absolutely loved it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Should we get on with it? Yes. Now here's the show. I'm off to have a chat today that I think I really need, and it's a chat that I'm certainly intrigued by because it's going to be predominantly about parenting. I don't think exclusively so, because I think a lot of the things I'll be talking about today will also apply to any relationship with anyone, whether it be a partner, a work colleague, a friend, etc. But parenting, I mean, I'm a parent, I'm a step-parent. It's hard. It's amazing. I love being a parent. It's bloody hard. So I think the more we can talk around this subject and look at different ways of doing it, the better. So let's go have a chat with Philippa Perry.
Hello.
Hi, Philippa. Hi. Nice to meet you. I'm Fern.
Hi, Fern. Come in.
Thank you very much. Should we take our shoes off?
No.
Are you sure?
What we have predominantly with our children is a relationship, and any relationship is half them and half you. So if we're just going to look at, say, a child's behaviour, it's no use looking at that in isolation, because if there's something that you don't like about the way your child's reacting or behaving, don't look at the child, look at your relationship. Mm. So that means looking at you. What are you bringing to this relationship? What assumptions are you bringing to it? What of your upbringing are you bringing to it? So that's why I want people to unpack that stuff first.
And how was that process for you? Because I'm imagining that you have been through that process yourself at some point, either when initially parenting or writing this book even, perhaps.
I mean, I'm going through it all the time.
Yeah.
Because you never can unpack everything.
No.
You know, we are layers of an onion. You know, it's difficult to peel it all back. But, you know, self-awareness is an ongoing task, I think, for all of us. And in the book, I've just given us a few tools to help us understand what we are bringing to this relationship.
Because I imagine with most people, and I can certainly recognise it in myself as a parent, but also aside from being a parent, just in everyday life, the patterns that we see our parents kind of lay upon us that they may have experienced from their parents,
yeah,
we do carry those and often then, you know, repeat that pattern again to
I mean, especially if there are things we don't want to carry. And then when we're under stress, we find us reverting to the familiar.
So why do we do that when we know that it's painful? It's bizarre.
Because we haven't got time in the moment to work it all out and think. Right now, all you know is that you're irritated and you want to stop your kid running across the road. So you scream and grab them.
Yeah.
And really, what else could you do in that circumstance, you know? So sometimes, you know, those old kind of knee-jerk reactions are fine, but other times they're not. Like, suppose you can't get your kid to get in the bath, or once they're in the bath, you can't get them to get out of the bath. You might feel like smash and grab is the way, you know, that's what would have happened to you in that circumstance, but maybe it might be interesting to try something else.
And how do we break those patterns? Is it as simple as going, I know that I always freak out when my kid doesn't get out of the bath and I've got to do something different, and you just try it once? You know, how do we get into the habit of breaking those patterns?
When you know you're stuck in a sort of like pattern that is not helping and it seems to lead to the same kind of negative situation every day, what you need to do is notice when your emotion is charged. Now, why am I so upset because he's splashing in the bath or something? Why am I so upset about that? What we need to do is trace back, when did I last feel this self-righteous or whatever the emotion is? And then realise, oh my goodness, this is how I habitually respond to situations. Mm. So then you realise it's not so much as what is happening in the present as this is your habitual response. It's like, it's a habit because other people don't react in this way to this situation all the time, but I do. It's a habit. So when you notice something is charged, notice your habitual response and trace it back to other instances when you felt it. Maybe you can trace it back to when you first felt it. You might not be able to, but you might. And quite often, people find things like when their kids are crying and whining and they're not happy like they should be because you've put so much effort into it. And you trace back your annoyance. You might find that you hated being helpless or clumsy or vulnerable when you were a child, and their behaviour is threatening you, like to trigger feeling like that again. So the last thing you feel like doing is feeling with them. You just want to close it down. But if you go, oh, let's override that. Let's, instead of closing it down, I do experiment feeling how they're feeling with them. And then you soften, and then you find yourself on their level, and then you find yourself having a moment of connection. Then they don't have to try so hard, because that's all they wanted anyway, was a moment of connection. And then you go, oh, all seems to be love and harmony around here now. But I think until we do dare to re-experience what it felt like being a child, we tend to circumnavigate that. But actually, when we do it, it's not as bad as we thought. I've got an example in the book of a father called Mark who, when his kid was two, thought, I can't take this anymore, I'm out of here. But he was persuaded to try some therapy. And I said to him, well, what happened to you when you were two? Nothing, perfectly normal childhood, nothing, my father left, nothing really. Oh, hang on, what was that? What was that there?
Rewind.
What was that? Rewind, what was that my father's left? Oh, I don't mind. I mean, I had a great mum and I had a fantastic childhood and everything. But I got him to regress and actually feel what it was like when his father left, how scared he was, how angry he was. And he kind of got back into it and relived it. And he told me afterwards, that if he ever went back there, ever felt like that again, he thought he was going to smash every window in a house or self-combust or do something violent or something. Because, you know, he's 42 now. Yeah. He's not two. He can control himself. Mm. But he felt like he was going back to being two and he wouldn't be able to. And he didn't want to run away from his child. He wanted to run away from the feelings his child threatened to trigger in him.
Yeah.
But by sort of working it through in therapy, he realised those feelings aren't as scary now as they were then.
And feelings is something you concentrate on a lot. After we've kind of looked at our own childhood, you talk a lot about feelings and the fact that obviously kids encourage and often force us to deal with those difficult feelings that we might have suppressed or feelings that we don't think we're able to cope with. At what point in our life do you think growing up we start to, I guess, culturally feel indoctrinated to start suppressing feelings? Because it isn't acceptable as an adult to have a tantrum in the middle of the supermarket or to say to someone, I want what you've got. You know, we do get conditioned to hold back, you know, what are deemed negative and positive feelings.
Well, yeah, there's sort of three ways of thinking about feelings. There is, let it all hang out and become hysterical and behave inappropriately in supermarkets. Or there's button it all up, don't feel that, I'm not feeling that. Nope, I am a, adult. I don't behave like that. So we can go mad or we can go repressed. Mm. But there is a middle way, which is having the feelings but containing them.
Yeah.
So knowing what you feel rather than pushing them right down and containing them. And you get to do this if you can put your feelings into words. The more you can put your feelings into words, the more that you get to be the boss of them rather than them being the boss of you.
And does that involve talking or writing or how would you...
Well, talking, writing or thinking.
Yeah.
So you've got repression, going mad or containing. Now... containing is when we have all our feelings, it's just that we don't let them rule us. We use them a little bit like employees, if you like, giving them our report, sort of like, I can't help noticing, Philippa, that you're feeling a little bit jealous of of Fern, who's got a podcast and you haven't, right? So instead of smashing up all her equipment, what would you like to do? Maybe it's telling me that I would like to have a podcast too. Yes, that's a good idea. Maybe you could have a podcast too. What I'm doing there is I'm noticing my jealousy. I'm not going to sabotage your podcast and smash your equipment up or anything like that, which is what I might have done when I was two.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say, oh, this is information for me. This jealousy is telling me that I would like to have a podcast, so maybe I can have a podcast. And so that's information that empowers me, it sort of inspires me, gives me an idea, rather than is a negative thing. Any emotion you might have thought as negative is actually
helpful.
Good information.
Yeah.
Now, this is particularly important when we are maybe getting overtired of being kind and responsive to our children because we haven't had any me time and we're feeling run down and we're losing our ground a bit because we haven't had time to check in with ourselves. So when we're feeling that, it's not negative. It's like, this is telling me I need to put down a boundary before I get to my limit. So your boundary might be something like, I need you lot to be in bed at 8 o'clock because I want to go to bed and I can't go to bed until I've put you to bed.
So it's that honesty and explaining to your kids that's what's happening and it's because I need that time and they therefore respect that and your opinion.
If we say to kids, you've got to go to bed now because you're tired,
that
don't
doesn't
work. Define the children, define yourself. If you're tired, you don't need telling you're tired.
It's helping them have empathy, I guess, as well, because they're going, oh, you're in this situation too, and you have a feeling you'll experience if I don't go to bed. So it's getting them to be on board with that.
It's also giving them the example of verbalising your feelings.
Yeah.
So when you want to leave the playground because you've been in the park for 4 hours pushing swings now, and you're getting a little bit cold, even though they seem to be quite happy.
They can't feel it.
No, I don't know what's happening there.
No.
So rather than said, you've had enough now, we're going home, they'll go, I haven't had enough.
Yeah.
But if you say instead, I'm cold, I'm tired, 5 more minutes and then we're going home, and you follow through, they're actually remarkably understanding.
Mm.
Define yourself and not the child is a revelation to some people.
Oh,
because
completely. And it gives them responsibility. Like it's their responsibility to accept what your feelings are and to act upon that and that information you've given them. I hadn't even given that a thought until I read that in your book, to be honest. I would usually just bribe them and go, should we go and get a croissant in a magazine and beg them to leave the park in that way? But actually, I have been trying to do that now. I'm just being blatantly honest and putting myself into the equation.
Yeah, because it's in there anyway, so let's not pretend it's not.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. One of the things, talking about feelings, that the main takeaway I had from your whole book, and it's been a massive one for me, is that validation of feelings. Because I think, like many people my age and above, will very much have been brought up to understand that there are certain emotions that are not acceptable or appropriate in certain situations. And also, I think we've all probably been on the receiving end of being ignored if we are kicking off about something or making a fuss because it's inappropriate, inconvenient. And that's not just my parents. I think it was across the board. Yeah. That's how we've been brought up. So if you were going, I want the chocolate bar, and your mum says no, they would probably ignore you and let you just, you know,
kick off about it.
Yeah, and let that simmer on its own over here until you get exhausted. And I've probably been doing that a bit with my own kids up until reading your book, because I didn't understand the sort of potency of validating their feelings. Yeah. So your advice is to go, you're upset, aren't you?
Or to go, oh, I can't let you have an ice cream before lunch, and you are unhappy about that, sorry. Mm. Rather than, I've told you already, no ice cream before lunch, you know.
Yeah, it's a bizarre alchemy that works, though, because I've tried it with my daughter. So my daughter's 3, my son is 6. And my daughter will get anxious before going to bed. So she'll usually say, oh, are there spiders? Are there foxes in the house? You know, any imaginative creature that could be in the house. Yeah. And I used to just go, look, we're not going to worry about this anymore. They're not in the house. You've just got to lay down now.
Yeah.
And then I read your book and I thought, okay, I know that's not working. So I've been doing it for over a year. And it usually still takes half an hour of convincing or singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. So I've started to go, you're scared, aren't you?
Yeah.
And she goes, yeah. And then she feels heard.
Yeah, she's
and
not
understood.
Alone.
She's not alone in
so it. So immediately it's sort of less scary.
Mm.
There's a lovely story that somebody told me in the book of a little boy who would just wake up and start to scream.
Hell
just
earth.
Scream.
Yeah.
And he'd run into his parents' bedroom and go, ah, and just scream. And when they started to say what was wrong, sort of like, you sound lonely. Are you lonely? Yes, I'm lonely and I need a cuddle. So this went on for a bit, and so he stopped screaming. He could say, I'm lonely, I need a cuddle. So, oh, this is getting better.
Mm.
And then he'd come into their room in the morning and go, I'm lonely and I need a cuddle. And she said, you don't sound lonely, you sound quite happy. Oh, yes, I'm happy, but I still want a cuddle. You can have a cuddle, you don't have to feel bad to have a cuddle. Mm. So this happened in about 4 days. He went from screaming and then being able to put that scream into words.
Yeah.
And then the words transforms the feeling.
Mm.
Now, we might think, like, when our kid says to us, there's monsters under the bed. No, there aren't. I've just checked. There's just a pair of bedroom slippers. Go to sleep. That's really natural.
We all do it, yeah.
That's really natural. But what we've got to do is hear the feeling. So it's like you said, oh, that sounds scary. Can you tell me about the monsters? What are their names? Let's make up a story about them. Because what they're actually saying is, I'm lonely. I'm not ready to let go of you yet.
Yeah.
So if we put that into words, you sound lonely, you don't want to let me go, it immediately makes them feel better because now they know what's wrong.
Mm.
Don't you know yourself if you go, you say to your partner, oh, I've got this free-floating anxiety, I don't know what it is, and he'll say, you know, that's because of, you know, we've got those awkward people coming round later in the week or something like that. And you go, oh, yeah, I knew it was that. Oh, thanks. And you feel immediately like
absolutely.
You can hold it and contain it
yes.
and you know what it is. Well, you know, children just want us to do that for them too.
And like you say, there can be quite quick changes in behavioural patterns, like with that kid being scared and lonely at night because they feel heard and it instantly... It has a...
They're not alone with the feeling anymore.
Yeah,
so that's
exactly.
why it's sort of like, oh, I'm all right now.
But I think so many people are scared to do it because they feel they're going to exasperate the situation. Yeah. I think many people, and I probably initially felt it, I thought if I said to my daughter, you're scared, aren't you? It would heighten it. Yeah. And she'd go, oh, God, I am scared. What if I'm going to be scared forever at night? And I thought I was going to, you know, just completely exasperate the whole problem. But it weirdly didn't. Why is that? Is it just because they...
Well, think about when it happens to you.
Yeah.
When you say something like, I fell over and hurt my knee. And your partner has two ways of responding to it. He could say, oh, I bet that hurt.
Mm-mm.
Or he can go, oh, come on, it's only a little bruise, don't make a fuss.
Yeah, yeah.
Which one are you going to feel better with? The one that went with your feeling or the one that denied it?
Mm. And this doesn't just exclusively work for parenting. I think this goes for work relationships, friendships, marriage, hearing somebody properly and listening.
We all need to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, that for me has been a game changer, Philippa. Like, it really has.
And we don't often, sometimes we're not very articulate. I mean, even poets have difficulty putting their feelings into words. And so sometimes you might have spent the day before at a theme park with your kid, and then the next day they come up to you and say, "We never go out," because they're in the present. Mm. They're in the right now, and they don't know how to express themselves lately. And it's a saint who doesn't say, "But we went to Legoland yesterday." But instead, if you stay in the present with them and say something like, "You sound a bit bored and fed up. What would you like to do?" And then they'd go, "I want to go back to Legoland again." And then you can say, "Yeah, that was fun, wasn't it?" Then you have that moment of connection.
Yeah.
It's not that we're going to go to Legoland every day. They're not stupid.
Yeah.
They know that. They know it doesn't work like that. They're just having feelings about it.
And this is also about long-term relationships. This is not just it works in the now so you can get a good night's sleep or whatever. This is so when you have a grown-up child like you do now, a daughter in her 20s, that she still knows she can come to you and say, "Mum, this is how I'm feeling." And you're not going to poo-poo it and go, "Oh, get over it," or whatever. You, because she knows from being a small child, you've reacted by hearing her, she'll come to you now. And I think there's a lot to be said for that, that we concentrate so much on when they're little and making our lives easier. But the relationship you have now, I'm imagining, with your daughter is pretty good.
It is pretty good. And it's a long-term relationship. Mm. It's not just about, let's fix this now.
Yeah.
It's long-term. So, for instance, if they say something which is blatantly, you could fix it in a second for them, they might say, "I don't want to go around there because I don't like the sausages." We can just say, "Well, just leave the sausages then." You know, we can get a bit irritated. But if we say, "That sounds like a problem. What could you do about the sausages?" Mm. And they go, "I suppose I could ask to leave them." And you go, "That's a good idea." And they've sort of fixed it themselves. They feel empowered and they felt good about coming to you. Now, the reason why that's important is because those sausages are filed under, in their mind, something icky. Now, suppose also filed under something icky is the piano teacher puts his hand on my leg and I don't like it. Now, we really want that information.
Oh, yeah.
We want that information. But if they're so used to being told not to be silly, we might not get that information.
That's so true.
And we think, oh, there's a world of difference between some off sausages and someone groping your leg. But for the child, there isn't. They haven't got your experience of sexuality. They don't know how the world works. They just have an instinct and a feeling. And before, when they've had those instincts and feelings, we've told them not to be silly. Mm. So it's really important never to tell a child not to be foolish or not to be silly, but to listen to what they're saying and validate the feeling so that their instincts remain intact. So when they are in real danger, they'll know.
Yeah.
And they'll know who to come to talk about it as well.
And often our reaction, if it is to say, "Oh, don't be silly, just leave the sausages," I think part of it also is not just to make our lives easier, but because we're scared of them experiencing something negative. We don't want to see our kids suffer.
We want them to be happy.
We want them to be happy. So we just try and go, no, don't worry about the sausages and move on. But it's really important they experience bad stuff and pain.
Well, they will anyway.
Exactly.
We can't help that. They will anyway. If something has got the power to make you happy, it will also have the power to make you sad. Mm. Whether it's the batteries running flat on your Game Boy or your best friend moving away or whatever it is. So life is full of sadness as well as happiness. But we're so keen on our kids being happy all the time that we tend to try and scold them sometimes into happiness, and that really doesn't work. What we want to aim for is to develop a capacity for happiness, and we do that by accepting all of a kid's feelings, not just the convenient ones.
So how do we get that balance? Because I feel very torn with that one a lot of the time. If my kid, say my son, comes back from school and something's happened that he wasn't happy about, I do want to kind of either push it away and try and go, no, don't worry about that. Or I want to immediately solve it and, you know, whatever. But how do we sort of sit in that pain and let them experience the bad stuff and feel like we're still protecting them and doing our jobs?
Well, the thing is just to be with them, be alongside them. Instead of going, "Oh, that doesn't matter," say instead, "Tell me a bit more about that. Then how did you feel? And then maybe when you feel like you've really unpacked it, you can say, so what ideas have you got to fix it, if you want to fix it? Or how are you going to make this more bearable for yourself? Not just don't play with them, play with someone else.
Yeah.
Don't give them that advice.
Yeah.
But if they come to that advice themselves, they'll embody it and they'll be able to follow it. And it's usually something like, don't bother with Joey anymore. Go and play with Armid. You know, it's usually something pretty simple. But if they get there themselves, they'll embody it. It's like if you go and see a counsellor, they'll never say, leave your husband.
Yeah, so true.
What they'll do is they'll let you figure it out and be a sounding board so that you have the courage to go, you know what, I think I'd do better if I left him. And then the council will go, whew, thank the Lord. You know?
And all of us, I guess, accepting, whether you're a parent or not, that pain is essential. Like, that is something that we all have to go through to grow, to perhaps go more within and figure out how we work and life.
So, to work out who to play with.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to play with people that don't give me so much pain in future. Mm. But until we've played with people that make our lives miserable, we think, oh, hang on. You know, we have to go through it. We have to learn.
Because you quoted a psychoanalyst, Adam Phillips, who says, the demand that we be happy undermines our lives. And that's perhaps where many of us are going wrong, because we just think that the holy grail is ultimate happiness where there is no pain, which is, of course, unrealistic, but also not good for us.
And if we push it away and pretend it's not happening, we don't learn how to cope with it. And if we don't learn how to cope with not being played with in the playground when we're five, we're not going to learn to cope with it when we get older as well. And then we might fall into mental health difficulties because we're panicking when we're feeling emotions we've been taught to think of as negative, rather than things that we can contain and work through.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
There's a personal anecdote that you put in the book about when you are walking down the street with your daughter when she's small, and you've got loads of shopping bags and you want to get home, but she wants to sit and look at ladybirds on the pavement. So you go with that and you go, although your initial reaction might have been, I really could do without this right now.
Yeah.
You go down to her level, you have that moment with her, you notice that she's tired, so you sort of hear her in that way, you understand that she doesn't want to keep on walking. And then a guy comes over to you and he says,
is she winning?
Mm.
Yeah, this old man, very sweet old man, probably thought he was supporting me as a parent. He probably watched the whole thing of me going down the road at a snail's pace and then her plopping herself down on a step. And he probably saw me go, because I had to change my plans in that moment. If I see the situation from her point of view, she's like 2 years old. She's only just learnt to walk. She's been to the shops. She hasn't got a way of just focusing on one thing. So she's probably been very overstimulated by all the lights, all the people, you know, having to cross the roads and hold hand. And it's all been very difficult. And she's just maybe overstimulated and exhausted and needs to focus on one thing, the ladybirds. And so if I realise that in the moment, I can go, oh, I can be flexible about my plans of waiting till we got home before we rest, and I can just be with her now. So I think if we start to see things in terms of winning and losing, we've already lost, because we're both on the same side.
Does that work in all situations? Because some people might think, well, how does our kid learn to hear the word no, which they inevitably will later on in life? They're not always going to get to stop and look at the ladybirds.
But at that moment, that's all she's capable of.
So is it a
she's
bespoke
two.
Situation that you would use
if,
that method?
If I said, come on, when, you know, she's two, she'd be completely overwhelmed. She would have had a tantrum. So sometimes you have to just go with what's happening in the now. And then when she'd finished looking at the ladybird, then we carried on with our our journey. To behave well, we need certain things in place. And they are flexibility, problem-solving skills, and a tolerance for frustration. Now, I think I behaved terribly well there because I tolerated my frustration of having to stop. I was flexible about my plans and I problem-solved by thinking, well, once she's had a rest, then she'll be able to walk on again. And it all went well. Now, our children learn those three things from watching us do that. They learn flexibility, they learn tolerance for frustration, and they also learn, if they've been looked after in that empathetic way, they also pick up empathy as well. So that's another thing that's quite useful in behaving conveniently, is having empathy. Now, we all learn these skills at different times. My daughter learnt them quite quickly. So by the time she got to being about four, for instance, if she wanted to stop on the step, I would have said, oh, I see you want to stop on the step. Okay, can we just stop on the step for 1 minute? Because I really need to get home because I want to let go of these bags. And she put on, oh, it's okay. You know, so we sort of negotiate and collaborate.
But again, it's that honesty that's integral.
Yeah.
Telling them that your plan is this, so, and you've explained it to them, and they have a choice whether to say
and
yes or no.
And sometimes I'm really, really firm. Like, if we have to be somewhere, I'll say, in 3 minutes, we are leaving the house. And then 2 minutes, we're leaving the house. 1 minute, we're leaving the house. And then, when she was very little, I'd pick her up and go. And she might go, I don't want to leave the house. And I go, I know you don't want to leave the house. It's a shame, but we're leaving the house anyway. So I'd physically, when I was able, always follow through on what was going to happen.
Yeah.
What I said was going to happen was going to happen.
That you've communicated what's going to happen.
Yeah,
there's no surprise there.
No, I don't. No surprise. Lots of respect. Communicated what's going to happen, and then it happens. And then when she got far too big for me to pick her up, when I said we're leaving in 3 minutes, she sort of goes, oh, sort of knew we were going, and I just thought, does she know I can't pick her up anymore? It seems to be working anyway. So. Lots of communication. Keep talking and talking and talking. And kids don't actually want to play the winning and losing game unless they learn it from you. Kids want you to be their friend. They want a great relationship with you.
Absolutely. With behaviour, if they're kicking off about things, having a tantrum...
Let's just call that inconvenient
behaviour. Which is inevitable with all young kids. You know,
Adults, yes.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, we have to, I guess, have the acceptance around that. Like, I was listening to Eckhart Tolle talk about parenting recently on a podcast, and he was saying... For all of us, say our kids kicking off, it brings up anxiety, which might be connected to, like you said, our past or whatever.
Yeah.
But it feels horrible because they're freaking out. You don't want them to. You don't want them to be upset or whatever it is. Yeah. But we have to find the space to let them do it within ourselves. So we have to sit and go...
We haven't really got much choice.
We haven't.
Because they actually don't have a choice about having a tantrum.
Yeah.
If you watch a little tiny kid having a tantrum... Nobody would choose to feel that bad.
No.
They feel absolutely terrible and they haven't got a choice, even though we probably would have if we were kicking off like that, whether to carry on or not, because we've got a little bit more control. They haven't got a choice. And a kid will come across things that won't go their way. And until they've developed this tolerance for frustration, kicking off might be how they respond to it. So what they need in that moment is understanding, sort of like, yes, you want to swim with the penguins. I'm sorry, you know.
We've all wanted to swim with the penguins.
Yeah, of course we have. Or fly to the moon or even have an ice cream before lunch or whatever it is. And sometimes when they kick off, they get so flooded with it. They've even forgotten what they're kicking off about.
Oh, my son does that all the time.
So we don't know what they're kicking off about or anything. So what we can do is just be with them and maybe hold them, be on their level, and not tell them off for feeling so dreadful. I mean, they don't need two things to cry about.
No, it's so true. Some people, and I know that you mentioned this in your book, might think, oh, I don't want to be a walkover. I don't want my kids to be able to walk all over me. What's the difference between you allowing them to do that and have that space to kick off, slash sort of having boundaries and them knowing, you know, how to behave?
Or... Okay, kids do need boundaries, okay. But when a kid hasn't got a choice, like they're 2 year olds and they're having a tantrum, they haven't got a choice about it. Suppose they're 6 years old and having a bit of a tantrum. I'm not going to do my homework. I'm not, or whatever it is. You can say, yeah, you are finding it hard doing your homework. I know. I'll come and sit next to you while you do it so you won't feel lonely doing it. Or what would make it easier for you to do it? Because it's got to be done.
Mm.
How can I help you with that? And things like you might get fed up with how untidy their room is or something. And so you define the problem by defining yourself, not them. So I have a problem with your room being so untidy. Can you help me work out what we're going to do about this?
Mm.
And they might say, I think you should just put up with it. And you go, well, that seems like a very good solution for you, but it wouldn't work for me. Mm. Have you got any more ideas?
So it's taking responsibility for your part in it.
And you might think, oh, my God, this takes so long. But bringing up kids takes a long time.
Well, it's
anyway,
hard work. It just is.
It's a really long time. So put the time in positively at the beginning rather than negatively later on.
Mm.
So, for instance, with my kid, when she could put away toys in a basket, that was no problem. But she found folding clothes difficult. So she said, I can't fold clothes. I said, OK, put the toys away. And when you get to the folding clothes stage, come and find me and we'll work out ways to do it together.
Mm.
And the point is really not to have a tidy room. The point is to learn how to collaborate.
What is the difference for people out there who might have a kid that constantly tantrums, for instance, or has a real specific freak out about the same thing again and again? When do we know that this is just to be expected versus when we should reach out for professional help with situations?
I think if you feel out of your depth, reach out. I mean, there's no harm in reaching out. You go to your GP, they can find you someone to talk to, a midwife if it's a very young baby, or some sort of other worker if it's a bit older that can just help you, a child psychologist or someone that can just help you with how not to panic and how to be in these situations. These things that we have to learn, the tolerance for frustration, the flexibility and the seeing things from others' point of view, we all pick them up at different stages. Some people don't pick them up till late. I didn't learn to read until I was 9. Other people don't learn a tolerance for frustration until they're 15. You know, it's not a race.
Yeah.
You just learn the skills at different times and we can get help at any time.
When I was reading your book and I was going through this sort of brilliant roller coaster of feeling different things, I think most readers will feel the same. They'll feel relieved at times, they'll feel massively inspired, certainly helped out, and that there'll be some game-changing takeaways, but also regret. At some point, I think everybody would go, God, I wish I hadn't done that. Or, I mean, every parent feels like that. We've acted in a way we wish we hadn't because we haven't thought about that moment or the kid in that way. We've reacted and it's been, you know, very instinctive and we've gone with it and we've been angry or whatever it is. How do we stop from completely beating ourselves up if we feel like we have fucked up in the past?
Well, we all mess up. And the thing is, your kid is not a project that you get right or ruin. They are a person you have a relationship with.
That's so important that you've just said that, by the way, because I think most people feel a bit of pressure on that. They have to raise the ideal kid who eats kale and is brilliant at karate and is an A-star student and whatever. And I think that's such a huge problem for so many people.
They're not a sculpture. They're a person. And don't think in terms of, I've ruined them, because they're growing human beings and we can all be flexible and we can all change. And the thing is, we will have made some mistakes. And we can say to a 10-year-old, you know, when you used to have tantrums when you were three, and I just used to lock you up in the attic and wait until it would all quieten down and I left you on your own. I really shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry. I just didn't know what else to do.
So is it never too late to have that moment?
It's never too late to have that moment, because although the 10-year-old might not remember that time, they might suddenly start to feel a bit better about themselves. I mean, a parent can say at any time to the kid, it's not you, it's me, or my bad. And once a parent said to me, but don't our kids always need us to be right, otherwise they won't feel secure? I think, no, they need us to be authentic, otherwise we are in danger of modifying their instincts, which are perfectly good.
I completely agree, because I've, for all the things that I might have done wrong, I have always been pretty good with, if I've shouted at my kids or I've done something that I regret, I have quite instantly said sorry. And now if my kids do have a tantrum or whatever, at some point they will come to me and go, Mum, I'm really sorry.
The great thing is, when they pick up how to apologise from us, apologies aren't this very painful thing that's difficult to force out, because they're not all shrouded in shame and humiliation. This is not about humiliating yourself when you go, my bad, I shouldn't have done that. I remember when my daughter was four and she said sorry to me for the first time. It was absolutely amazing. She said, sorry, I was grumpy in the car, Mum. I was hungry. I'm all right now. I thought, blimey, I didn't even notice she was grumpy in the car, actually. I was that insensitive. But the fact she was saying...
What a great moment.
Yeah, it was such
a great moment.
I thought, oh my God, it's really paid off. The fact, the number of times I've had to say my bad to her. It's great.
Because your book, you know, it's not like these are rules of how to parent. This is a parenting style you could go with. This is just how to be a human, isn't it, essentially?
Yeah,
it's how to be a human.
It's okay to be authentic.
Yeah.
It's okay to define ourselves and not the child. It's okay just to have feelings and not have worked out the reasons. And these are true for life as well,
But it does feel like there is a new wave of parenting coming in, because I think really we've been sort of parented still in a very kind of weird Victorian way, almost.
It's almost as though we've had to choose between authoritarian or completely lax.
Yes.
And what I'm saying is, no, we can collaborate and we can put our boundary, not where some book says it's got to be, but just before we lose it. If our limit is where we, I can't cope with this anymore, and become a bit scary for our kid, we put the boundary down before that. Now, I've actually got quite low-level limits. I was really quite strict about some things. For instance, my daughter would say, oh, I don't like the pasta and the sauce all mixed up. Can you do it again separately?
I get that all the time.
I would go, oh, it's a shame. No. Why not? Because I can't be bothered to make it again.
Yeah.
But I want it. I'm sorry. It's like that, or you'll have to wait till the next meal, and I'll try and get it right for the next meal, but I've already cooked this. And, yeah, sometimes you'll go, I'm not going to eat anything then. Where's the crisps? I go, oh, no, I'm sorry, no crisps unless we've eaten that, or, you know.
Yeah. But you're being honest. You've been completely honest with your kid.
Yeah. Because I can't be bothered to cook it again. And if I do cook it again, it's not me that's, it's not her that's going to lose it. It's me. I don't want to build up resentment. And now other mothers, they're really lovely and they might cook it again. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing to do. All I'm saying is that's where my limit was.
So know your own limits is an important
thing. Know your own limits and put the boundary down before you get there.
Yeah.
And that usually means I didn't present a whole menu at breakfast or lunch. There was usually one thing to eat and you either ate it or you didn't, and that was it.
One area you touch on, which again I think is really valuable for parents but also for anybody dealing with relationships, is body language, and the fact that we probably underestimate body language quite a lot. So it can be very useful, I'm imagining, for, you know, babies and toddlers, because it's all body language. But actually later in life, in noticing how our partner is or how our friend is physically as well as what they're saying. Can you talk about the importance of that?
Well, people quite often say to me, what can I say to my teenager when? Or, and I go, there is not a prescription of words. We just pick up like body to body communication. When you've got a little titchy baby and you haven't got a language, but you have got body to body communication. Hold a baby and their cheek against your neck, and the skin to skin contact soothes them. That is body to body communication. And when you've got a tiny kid, you go, I'm going to change your nappy now. Even before you realise they've understood words, they lift their legs up in the air to help you. So it's this sort of, what there is before you get words is still an innate turn-taking facility that we seem to be born with. Of you make a gesture or a sound and the baby copies you, all the other way around. You get into this rhythm of give and take, of notice and response. And I don't think we ever leave, we never lose it.
I've got teenage stepchildren.
Yeah.
So I'm dealing with 3-year-old, 6-year-old, 13 and 17. So we've got this whole mix of ages going on, and there's always interesting challenges in the day to sort of look at. And I guess with my stepkids, who are absolutely good as gold and we have a brilliant relationship, the one thing is obviously they are on their phones a lot. And I think you notice within their peer groups and whenever you're with a lot of teenagers, they do find that intense sort of eye contact or connection more difficult. Or even if you're in a restaurant and they're ordering and the waiter comes over and they look at the menu, I have burger please, but they can't look at the waiter or the waitress. What's that about?
I think it's shyness and getting used to being a bit more separate from your parents. Like, actually, we just want them to be independent agents and look at waiters and, you know, be available for contact for other people. But if you think about it, your little kid has actually been clinging onto your leg for a few years, so you didn't expect them to look at other people then. And then they didn't know about embarrassment when they, or not so much, and so they weren't embarrassed. But when you get to be about, you know, 13, 14, 15, you're so embarrassed. Just being alive is embarrassing, and the fact that someone might look at you is embarrassing. So we just have to remember what it was like for us when we were teenagers and realise that we weren't as good as eye contact then either.
It's so true. I mean, my stepson finds me and my husband excruciating at the best of times.
Yeah, you're incredibly
We're
embarrassing.
We're so embarrassing, Philippa. Yeah, it's unreal.
Yes.
We need to rein it in.
Yeah, you really are.
Well, look, thank you so much for letting us chat today. I was just desperate to pick apart your brilliant book, and it's been wonderful.
Thank you so much for reading it so closely and being able to pick up on stuff that's in there. Thank you.
A big thanks once again to the tremendous Philippa Perry, who I could have talked to until the cows come home. Her latest book, The Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read and Your Children Would Be Glad You Did, is out right now. Next week, we meet fashion designer Alice Temperley.
I'm of an age now where I think, oh my God, people around me are younger and people I'm hiring are way younger than me, and I always used to be the youngest. And you actually think, God, I'm getting older. And I've only just opened my eyes to how complex so many parts of life are because I've been in my little work bubble.
Discover that episode and our entire back catalogue when you subscribe. And don't forget that the Happy Place Festival is coming. It's on the first weekend in August and it'll be at Chiswick House. And the 7th of September, we're in Tatton Park, Manchester. I'm so thrilled to say that guests included who will be talking on the talk stage and doing live podcasts there will be Russell Brand, Dame Kelly Holmes, Joe Wicks, Rylan, Reggie Yates, Katie Piper. I mean, what a lineup! And more. Get your tickets. I'll see you there. Happyplacefestival.com for all the info and tickets. They're a bargain price too. Massive thanks again to Philippa, to the producer, Mr. Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, and to you blimmin' lovely lot. Thank you so much for listening. And I'll see you next week.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.